insurance patient 20 years ago. I don't know if you remember me and my family, Dr. Dean.
Not 20, it's 30. 88, 91. You know, we're getting into the 30th anniversary. And, geez, I was going to say something else. You were just saying, so when Carol meets someone new here, they might drive somewhere to do something. So I always say, oh, what's the name of your new best friend, Carol? She'd give me the name, and that would be your best friend for a few weeks. And then she'd meet someone else, and that would be your best friend. She has an incredible number of best friends because they all get involved with her when they meet her. And then she takes advantage of them, rips off their cars. They drive her everywhere. She exploits them. and then they become a problem with it. Ion removes them in some nice way. They suddenly get transferred back to Portland or Mooresville. You know, they have to go move. And so they don't bother Carol anymore. Then she's on to the next new person she meets, usually at the
That's
pool.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, she's a grifter too, Ginny. You're in a proud tradition.
Very good. I love
it. What a hustler Carol is. It's incredible. Whatever she does, she goes right to the top with it. And Ian says she's competitive. Like, she competes with everybody. If she goes into something, she's going to be the best, no matter what it is. So, it's been vicious living with her, with the Impala, but I'm pretty good at handling it. I've had to become a pretty creepy guy in the long run, just putting up with the lack of ethics around Carol's life.
Very good, Bob. We feel such compassion for you right now.
Yeah, such a mean guy shouldn't deserve this, but I must have. As somebody, people used to say, Don McBurney used to say, Bob, you must have did something really amazing in your last lifetime to get all this karma. I said, yeah, I have a good suspicion I was Jesus.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
I built up my good karma, really, you know, covered many lifetimes there with that one. So,
Very good,
the hustling part of Carolyn, yeah, and that's why she's always investigated. As soon as she does anything, she gets investigated. She draws attention to herself immediately in every level. All the time.
She's always ready for it, though. She doesn't even think about it.
Yeah, she has alibis, immediate alibis. You know.
She does.
So I found a very interesting quote, Ginny, which is appropriate to discuss with you. Let me just move this down here. This is a statement by McLuhan in 1973, approximately. He was interviewed by a corporate magazine out of Montreal called Fortune, and they were part of what's called Hydro-Québec, which is, you know, big electrodynamic Tesla technology or something, right? Hydro-Québec, they provide the electricity. So it's a long, excellent interview, and they put a booklet out, and it has a long interview in French with McLuhan and with Herbert Marcuse, the Marxist student professor, radical guy of the 60s, and John Galbraith, the famous Canadian economist who was ambassador to India in the Kennedy administration. So Galbraith, McLuhan, and Marcuse are featured in 73. It's probably the peak of their fame. McLuhan's already being attacked. Marcuse is on his way out. Galbraith is getting old. And so there's the French transcription and the English transcription. And I'm really glad I found it. It's a corporate brochure kind of thing. It's a booklet that's very corporate, very specially prepared for the company, I guess, whoever subscribed to their company's magazine. So it's this French journalist, Mr. Paré, says, after a lot of other topics, he says, if we stop the energy output, this will unplug all the communication media. People will have to switch on, turn on, and plug back in. Now, that's sort of like Ion's big EMP warning that wipes out the guff, right? You unplug all the communication media. And this is 45 years ago, a lot tinier mixed corporate media environment. But anyways, pretty devastating when it gets homeopathized to today's situation. So this guy says that statement. Then McLuhan says, well, then again, you can have experiences without any meeting at all. Most people have experiences without meaning. The capacity for getting meaning into experience or out of experience is very limited. And when you step up the sheer amount of experience, the amount of meaning goes down. So he's talking about people getting overloaded with information in the global theater, and even less meaning is happening. He's saying most humans don't come up with much meaning in general. But now it was worse 45 years ago. Then he says, there's another way of looking at this. I have been thinking about lately. With the very high speeds of information movement, we live hundreds of years in a decade. Now, many of you might have heard me occasionally say, we live 200 years every 12 months. Well, I got it from McLuhan, and he might have said it somewhere else, but if I didn't get it anywhere else, I got it here, back when I read this in the mid-70s. So he says, we live hundreds of years in a decade. Electronic man lives in terms of experience and knowledge. He lives through hundreds of years of ordinary life in a very short time. A 12-year-old child today is older than Methuselah, much older in terms of experience. Now, our institutions are geared for 70 years, 70 years and 10. The welfare, our retirement funds, our educational instructions, our legal institutions, everything we have is geared for people who live 70 years or 60 years. But we actually are now living hundreds of years every decade. How do you relate people like that to these institutions? Suppose modern medicine were to tell us tomorrow or today, as they could soon, everyone now living will live for 200 more years. Anyone who is now alive will have at least 200 years to live. It's quite possible that medicine will arrest the aging process. So what would happen to man and society if he were suddenly given 200 years to live? Most people would go mad. But it is what is happening now in effect. With the high speed of information movement, we are living hundreds of years every decade at least, and we have no institutions to accommodate this new experience, so we go mad. The whole world has become, in a sense, a mental institution. That's a new. So we used to have a global village, global theater, global membrane. Now, no one picked up on this. Nobody read this. He was saying in the 70s, we were a mental institution, a global mental institution. He says the whole world has become, in a sense, a mental institution. When everybody is hundreds of years old in terms of experience and knows all the cultures in the world, then the little space that one calls home, in quotes, home, one's town, is a prison. Okay, this is why everybody started running around trying to get the hell out of wherever they were in the 60s and 70s. Where was I? The little space that one calls home, one's town, is a prison. So we begin to think about space travel. This discrepancy between the amount of experience available and the institutions in which we try to force it, provides a very big gap in our living, which we pay for emotionally. This is why people get stressed. So Jean Perret responds, all parts of the world, and this is very tiny print, so I had to make a picture of it, so it's kind of tiny. All parts of the world don't get the same amount of experience, the same amount of media exposure. For example, in Stockholm, there was a conference about ecology. And on one side, we had the rich countries who wanted to depollute their rivers and lakes and air, and the young and poor countries who wanted to pollute theirs. You know, that's the third world. They wanted technologies. Isn't it a difference between the amount of experience, the amount of exposure, not to pollution, but to information? The guy's asking, isn't it a difference between the amount of exposure and not the pollution, but to information? McLuhan answers, yes. With radio and television, of course, the backward countries will quickly enter into the orbit of speeded up living and experience. So they, too, will have centuries of experience. Then looking, is there any more I could provide here? No, that's as far as we went and then what we copied. So, regardless of whether McLuhan was a Catholic, a Gnostic, a Buddhist, a Manichaean, or anything, he's taken on the real questions of the day, way back then. about the aging process. Don't you think that's pretty amazing, what he said?
Yep. Yes, Tom. Yeah, no, I'm here. Yeah, I think it is amazing, especially that they could predict the fact that we were going to be living hundreds of years because, you know, Time magazine came out, I think it was in 2012, and declared that the medical community had decided that the kids that were being born in this generation were going to live to 121.
Mm.
So right there, like Savannah and Austin's cousins, the younger ones that are born, you know, to say they're 7, 8 years old right now, they're expected to live to 121. And it's interesting because I think about this all the time, this whole life expectancy issue. And as we get older and live longer, which we are, you know, the number one challenge is financially people supporting themselves, which is why I say that in order to ascend, you're going to have to be rich. Because these ideas that you're going to have pensions and you're going to retire or you're even going to collect Social Security or anything, those things are not going to be there for a payout in, you know, say with Greg and I living another 60, 100, 200,000 years or however long we're going to live. And then the next thing you've got is the challenge of being occupied. And what are you going to do creativity-wise during that time? And, you know, one of the things that Ion is...
I heard Greg say in the background, go to other worlds.
Yeah, go to other worlds. And the other thing is that how do you have the infinite amount of creation and possibility to create? So you've got that element to consider when you're looking at your 200 or 300 year lifespan. And, you know, then you've got the issue of just societal structures and stuff. Because, like they said, everything's geared for, you know, you learn to drive, 18's this, 21's that, you're married by this, you're retiring it here, and then you're going in the ground here. And this is the programming that they want to put on people. But then at the same time, technology is extending life, and people are starting to consider that they don't have to have that experience. So, yeah, there's a lot going on. And it's very cool that they figured it out.
That they figured it out? Who figured it out?
Well, Marshall and them. They're sitting there saying, what is it going to be like? Now, the other thing that's interesting, too, is a lot of people don't want to do that for the very reasons that I just talked about. They don't see themselves as financially having the capacity to support themselves. They don't see themselves as having the desire or the creativity. And, you know, what would you live that kind of life for? It would be to travel, to have new experiences, all of which involves money and creativity. And most people don't see themselves as that creative. Like Ion says, most people are waiting to die right now.
Yeah, so because they don't want to suffer that they think they're going to suffer. Aging is not good. And why would they want to live another 50 years of pain? So, yep, they want to go soon. That may be why so many people are going to die in the NP because they're suicidal. The NP is going to be desired by people.
Right. They don't want to suffer not only aging, but they don't want to suffer loneliness because they don't know who else is going to live as long as they do. And the thought of living, say, you know, another 100 years and then reaching, you know, starting all over. What if you started over 4 or 5 times in that 100-year period? What if you got married 2 or 3 more times? What if you had 4 or 5 different more careers and or, you know, met, you know, blah, 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 tons of different people, started book clubs or whatever you did, you know? Mm. So there's that piece. And the other piece is people don't think the earth is going to be around that long. They think the earth is in a shit can. And they think that the earth is, Gaia is ascending. And, you know, Gaia has to ascend or it won't survive, all that crap. And so they think they're going to be living in some vision of Dune with no social security and no friends. And of course they don't want to live that life. And their imagination is not vibrant enough to create a world that appeals to them where they could want to sustain their world for a couple hundred years because it's so fascinating and compelling because most people are fucking boring.
Right, and if Trump gets a second term, oh, the suicides are going to really go high, sky high. Unless it becomes obvious that he's doing good and he overcomes the media bias.
There's no possible way, I will go on the record right now saying this, there's no possible way that the victims of America will ever see Trump as doing good because it threatens their victimhood. Victims do not resonate with powerful people like that. They just, every single fiber in their body is threatened by his powerful interpretation of life and events and himself. And they would just never, ever think that he's great. Ever.
I think you're right. So McLuhan's interesting. People naively in the 60s, 70s maybe thought, oh, it'd be good to live a little longer, not die, maybe live another 50 years. But McLuhan, realistic McLuhan, he realized, no, people would go mad. Not many people would talk about the aging process and aging process solved leads to madness. See, that's him looking at the disservices or reality, knowing that people, you talk about people are pretty boring. McLuhan said, what do you do with boring people? You have them earning money. Obsessed with making money. That's what he said back in the 70s. In Chatelaine magazine, a women's magazine. Everybody's running around having an abundant leisure society of much money, spending money. That's what you do with little people. You give them money to spend. Whereas McLuhan was not involved with that. He was probing the deeper aspects of being and not run around trying to get more money. He actually asked the university to decrease his salary. He was doing pretty good, $40,000 a year or something back then was pretty good, and he thought it was too much. But they wouldn't do it. They had to maintain their standards. So he would donate money to charities and things, give it away a little bit. So when you're a serious person,
let me just go back and say, Bob, if you were going to live, if the life expectancy becomes 200 years, just, you know, clinically, you're not going to start aging at 45. I mean, it changes the threshold of all things. So let's say you live for 200 years and you really don't start aging until you're 169 or some crap like that. That's a long time to live in a healthy, vibrant body. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and if people do that, they won't be upset living for a long time. That's like a frequency change when aging stops. That's what I'm talking about.
Let's talk about this because, you know, the other night you were talking about and you've talked about it many times, not just the other night, how the chemical body is obsolete. What does that mean? Is that because people are living in their chemical bodies for 200 years? That doesn't make it seem like it's obsolete to me. So what does it mean the chemical body is obsolete?
Well, right now we've got five bodies, and that means the chemical body and its concerns are just one-fifth of your awareness, one-fifth of your preoccupied thought. So as the media improves and shrinks and disappears, that's what I say the trend is lately, last 10, 15 years, is the people, as the media gets smaller, people relocate into their chemical body. And that's why the jackass sports started happening. People started abusing their bodies, banging it around. It was caught between having five bodies and only being one-fifth of their experience, but over the last 15 years, the chemical body seems to be coming back, but it isn't, because you're still within the invisible electronic and digital devices. You just don't see it as much. I mean, back then, in the 50s, 60s, you had to sit there and listen to radio, sit there and watch TV. You know, you were imprisoned. The media was bigger than you. There's none of that with mobile phones and all that stuff. So people are retrieving body awareness, and this could be part of a renaissance, but of course the facilities are giving them lousy props for their bodies. All the complains about. But the good Lord always provides a balanced ecology, and right when the worst food and worst everything for your supporting your returned body, right when that's happening, we have an antidote to that. Our stuff is here for the lucky ones to balance off the bad living conditions for the chemical body. Cause, so even though we've got the media shrinking and the chemical body is back and people feel they're in power over media, where they didn't 50 years ago, they are dying earlier, Carolyn says. They're getting sicker earlier. The young people are getting cancer earlier. So they're blowing the great evolution of media where the media shrunk and became just a slight prop and not dominating you like Barry Nevitt told me when he was in Germany in the 1933 coming back from the Soviet Union. He was standing there in Munich or someplace, and the Nazis came, you know, bashing along in the highway or in the main street with their public address system. He said it was absolutely terrifying with this electrified and surround that was bigger than you. See, we don't have that anymore. So the media in the 20th century dominated people, and McLuhan called it the discarnate condition, and it caused a lot of anxieties. Then it fragmented up into little specialized bodies, chip and TV, that shrunk and became friendly. Like, the fear of the baby boomers of technology in the 50s, 60s is the exact opposite of the embracing of technology by the millennials, and maybe a little older. They don't find technology a threat. And it isn't a threat. It's not huge like it was 60, 70 years ago. So
right.
The chemical body is coming
back. Let me just say something to that. I thought it was cute in Downton Abbey where they were talking about getting the wireless radio and the old man, he didn't want it. But then they told him, Carson, the guy told him, he said, well, but my lord, the king is going to be talking on the wireless. And he's like, oh my God, well then we've got to get one, but it won't last. It's just a fad, but we'll do it to listen to the king because that's what he valued. And then it's interesting to watch Downton Abbey, just the creeping in of technologies and how they end up swimming in it. And like you said, now there's no resistance to technology. It's just all like they just all can't wait to fucking blast off to Mars with fucking Elon Musk, man. James, my nephew, Austin, all of them, Houston, they all just want to be in the most AI-friendly environment, swimming around with all this crap, and there's no resistance at all.
Well, you notice McLuhan said that people start yearning to escape their little prison they're in, the Global Village prison, and they want to get into traveling interplanetary. So these kids, they think, I don't know if that's virtual. That's going back, that's an attempt to preserve the chemical body, to go out into space. You know, it's a bit clunky, but the overall trend is to celebrate the chemical body. It's a be-all and end-all, and nobody tell me what to do. You don't tell me what to do with my chemical body. So, but we know that chemical body is a visually biased retrieval. It's something you can see. And Ian's here to remind people that we're not retrieving the chemical body. We're going forth into a larger physicalness, a larger, more porous physicalness. That's the alternative to people who are seeing themselves being made bigger than the media, but haven't got the environment, lux, nats, smarts to do well with it. So we get a lot of desperate people. And look at the millennials. They really are afraid of the chemical body, it seems.
They only like their chemical body when they can see what it does on their stupid apps.
Yeah.
You know, their Fitbits and their Apple things and all the things that tell them how their heart's beating and how many calories they burned and all the rest of this. Then they're into their chemical body. But if they just had to be in a relationship with it without all the bells and whistles, they just don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. So, and they say their interest in sex is very low, sex is declining, So they just find it too awkward to relate to other people. So now there's always going to be subcultures that will break out of that and do other things. But we're talking about the general trend. So as the technology disappears, people should have a liberatory feeling, but they don't because they only know visual space and what they see. So they have to take our products to adjust to the new frequency, to the new
right,
physical
because
body.
The new physical body is the extensions of non-physical, right?
Yes. Well, non-physical is merged with the physical, and it's hard to say. I have that quote from McLuhan, inner goes outer and outer goes inner. Therefore, you can't be the old Christian philosophy, I'm in this world but not of it. That old Christian thing. No, when the worlds are inside each other, it's you can't get a visual borderline. So in that confusion of the inner and outer, non-physical merges with the physical. And I wouldn't want to say what it is. Are we going more non-physical or non-physical becoming more us? Ion is sort of says different ways about it. So we are into a new body, a new situation which doesn't die.
Right, and we don't know what that body is fully comprised of yet because, and I think it's kind of funny because Ion has said so much stuff. Some of the stuff they said just sounds like gibberish, but on the one hand, you know, it could be from the position that they're speaking, if you're outside of your chemical body, you're outside of your five bodies now, you're in the hexatic, or then moving into the seventh body, which we talked about, or what about the eighth body, the hexad, then you wouldn't have any reference
octet.
Point.
The
I mean
body,
the octad. Sorry,
yeah.
The octad. You wouldn't have any real reference for what they're referring to necessarily, but it is not what you know your chemical body to be now, for sure.
Yeah, the blur of the octad, hard to tell what it is, no 6 degrees of separation, no what, where, when, why, how. The discarnate condition we've been in since the telegraph with each new electronic device, we've been blurring the body boundaries, and McLuhan was describing, this is where he anticipated Ion, he's describing the immeasurable, unchartable sea we were now living in. That is what you were just saying, Ion predicted. It's the same situation, but Ion is giving the more practical physical parameters of why it's happening. But you can see electronic technology and its discarnate effect prepared people for less visual definition about where they are.
Absolutely, and at 100%. Less definite, they don't care. They don't care.
Right. So, now, Madeline, did you want to say something? She's there.
Is Madeline there?
Hey.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, Madeline.
Well, I don't really want to say anything in particular, except that I do miss Ginny. We were listening to some old Ion radio and some old Wednesday shows and stuff came up, and it was like, oh, Ginny.
Well, who's we?
That's funny.
Oh, me and Jean. You're too.
Oh, Jean is visiting you?
Yeah, she just left. But she's coming right back because she missed her plane, and so, yeah.
Oh, dear.
She screwed up. She screwed up?
Huh?
She screwed up and missed her plane.
I wouldn't say she screwed up. She did what she did, and now she's coming back. We quote-unquote screwed up. She hung out with me for 5 days, and we went to the Sequoia National Forest, and we screwed up so many things that ended up being better because we screwed up that I would not say anymore that anything is screwed up. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's fun that Jean's been out there. Hey, Madeline, I have a question for you, though, real quick. Did you hear Bob and I talk about it the other night?
No. I think I'm in trouble.
No, you're not in trouble at all. I just wanted to ask you, because I know you follow the Q. Oh, I just wanted to ask you, because I know you follow that QAnon stuff. Did you, Bob and I talked about it the other night, the whole rumor about JFK being QAnon?
Oh, my God, yeah. I've been paying attention to that for a year. It's hysterical. It must be something. I don't know.
Okay.
No, don't count on it.
Yeah, Bob and I...
I'm absolutely not. It's absurd. But it would be pretty... I mean, but everything's absurd. So who knows?
Right, but is QAnon saying that? Or that's an interpretation of what he's saying?
No, they're not. No, they're not. It, people are reading things into things. They have put a pretty compelling little case together, but I'm not making any predictions one way or the other with that. Did I answer?
So QAnon doesn't say particular things. You have to it says aspects of things, and you got to put it together.
The thing, yeah, I mean, people think that you're supposed to read all this stuff into what Q says, and the way I see it, that's not true at all. He says, or they say things that then get proven. You have to wait. You can't. They're not telling us. They're not giving us riddles that we're supposed to solve now. It's riddles that will be answered as future events unfold, and then you. But we're not supposed to try to figure out what they're saying. But this is what people are doing, and so they're thinking that there have been hints, but it's not even that. Like, Q really doesn't talk about it, actually. It's just there's this dude named Vincent Duco that looks like John... Who is it? Yeah, it's John Jr. in disguise.
Now, you need to speak a little louder.
Yeah, Q absolutely has not said anything about it. No.
Well, what has come true? Well, give me a couple examples of QAnon statements being realized.
I will send you a link. I'm not good at that. There's a ton. One that's pretty fun is a year old. It's actually one of the early ones, but it was... So we knew a false flag was coming because Q said there was, but also just because there was something going on politically that needed a distraction. It was like, oh, someone is getting lined up for a fall, so they're going to have to blow something up so that nobody pays attention. You know, that pattern that happens over and over.
Yeah.
So Q said he used a weird series of words in the beginning. The first letter of each one ended up being the same as the initials of this Indian currency. It was BK something, I don't know. But they said something about fireworks, and they said something about, like, they said a few different things. And it ended up there was a bombing in a mall, only it ended up all in Florida. Might have been Broward County, for all I know. I don't remember. But, it was like this guy had gone in there to bomb this mall, but it looked like the white hats had, this has happened twice, this is the first time, had exchanged his explosives for fireworks, and so all that happened was there was a bunch of smoke and some fireworks. But it was like, it seems like sort of showing the bad actors, we know exactly what you're doing, and you get to play your little theater out, but we're not going to let you kill anybody.
I just want to say, OJ, hold it there, OJ. I'll get to you. I just want to finish with Madeline. So, but you're not telling what was distracted from.
I can't remember what was going on back then. Okay, here's a really good one. This is a really, really good one. Hugh, 30 days before John McCain died, said the date and the hour and the minute of John McCain's death.
Oh.
Which...
That's pretty good.
...to show us, yeah, that he didn't die of cancer. It was an execution. It was planned. It was
So QAnon knew the time when he would be executed.
Yes. And
wow.
30 days, like to the minute before it happened.
And there's no bullshit about this. Millions of people who follow QAnon can quote this, and they should be on the news.
Bob, there's an archive. There's a whole internet. There's a website devoted to these proofs, because Q always says future proofs. You don't know what Q is saying until it happens, and then you can go back and see all the markers where they set it up.
Right.
There's over and over again.
Okay, well, send me that website. Send me that website.
I will. Okay.
So what does Q say about Trump, or is he talking even about Trump?
He doesn't say what Trump is going to do. It just says that Trump's a patriot and wants to...
Too muffled. Do a little louder.
Q just says Trump wants to protect America's sovereignty. That's it. He wants
Does he say Trump is successful?
Yes.
Does he say Mueller has a case?
Say anything specific about that. We don't know what Mueller's doing.
Why won't QAnon talk about that?
Well, think about it. If they did, they're not going to tip their hand one way or the other.
But these guys are against... The QAnon is not for Mueller?
Not for the witch hunt, but we don't know what Mueller's really doing. Maybe.
Oh, okay.
Right.
All right. Okay, I want to thank you for that update. I want to address OJ. OJ, you've written me some private messages. I would like to take your more general statements about ION or something, and can we discuss those? It's better than typing.
Okay, but I might have to go any minute, okay?
Okay. Well, let me see. You have your anti-environments. Okay. Say, Bob, I've intuitively understood the term since I first heard you use it. I never had
don't
the
daring read the whole email. Hey, Bob, don't read the
no,
email.
No, I won't read it. But you didn't apply it to understanding my and McLuhan's project. So my would be ION. So you didn't apply anti-environment to that. Then you say,
yeah.
Let's see... So what, do you want to go a bit into that? How am I applying it? How did McLuhan apply anti-environment? What do you understand about that?
Oh, God. Well, he's putting on the public intellectual.
Yeah.
And
are we doing that? Is Eindim putting on something?
Well, you're more putting on the spiritual guru.
Okay. Right.
But also, I guess, within that umbrella, you could probably put the public intellectual there. The secular gurus. So.
Right. Yes, because with ION, ION's not limiting themselves to, you know, book learning or regular political secular public intellectuals. He's purposely encompassing a lot of levels. That's a put on or a strategy that's I'm for. I'm for expanding the role of the secular individual, because McLuhan himself was aware not to bring up his Catholicism back in the very materialistic empirical 60s. But it's a different situation now. You know, a lot of people have explored all kinds of things the last 40 years. So you can include the, quote, spiritual. And I think that's what... And ION, though, can talk about Wall Street and not limited to the spiritual. That's what makes ION comprehensive and unique. So ION is putting on specialized public projections. It's trying to be a more comprehensive... intellectual, say.
Right.
And I did that in my crude amateurish way by including and playing my interactions with the Evergreens and other mediums and put that in my sort of secular role as a public intellectual, and that was not very popular. But I was anticipating what Ion would do in a, being a comprehensive intellectual. And it looks like that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to figure out some way of doing that. You agree?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the way I see it is the Catholic Church was the center of this wonderful world of the Middle Ages, which, you know, McLuhan had, at least early on, I think he had this affinity towards the Middle Ages, like many of the scholars that were, that influenced him, even though they've been called the Dark Ages and still have a bad connotation. But we're returning to a new Middle Age, a new Middle Ages, a new Dark Age, it'll be called by some, where it's not dark because of too little information, but because of too much.
Right, let me just interject here. McLuhan, okay, you know that Ion, listen to this, Ion says that the Dark Age began not in the Middle Ages, but with the printing press. And we're coming out of the Dark Age, out of the effect of the printing press. On the surface, right. It seemed McLuhan would agree with that. McLuhan, McLuhan seemed to be putting down the Gutenberg Galaxy and its services. He always, if you talk to him, you know, one-to-one, he'd say, well, I'm a teacher of books. That's my specialism. I like books. I'm not anti-books, but I think there's larger historical forces, and there was a huge disservice with the Gutenberg Galaxy, and it's being bounced off with the electrical situation. But we will go into a dark age in the electrical situation. We don't understand its disservices, just as we didn't understand the book's disservices. But in the 30s and 40s, he would write about the medieval period as a time of unity, the world view. It was before the printing press. It was a balanced time, a bit of visual space with the manuscripts and acoustics and tactile space. So he liked the balance of it, but I don't think he thought we were going back to it. He can't go back.
Well, not back. I'm not saying back. It's to a new, it's a new, look, we're going up and down from visual to audio tactile, right? And this is what's happening is a new kind of middle. It's not the same thing, but it's
what you're trying to say is a new balance, like McLuhan said the medieval period was.
Right.
We're having a new balance.
Here's the thing. McLuhan's not alone. I mean, and I didn't get that from McLuhan. I think there's a lot of good things to say about the Middle Ages, about the structure of it all, and everything has its place. And so that's actually the irony is. Those are called the Dark Ages, but like Ion says, the so-called modern age has been the Dark Age, and it's been crucial because I think these periods of that which are very violent, which are, you know, chaotic. These periods are periods of growth and renewal. So we're getting back to a more human time, just like the Middle Ages, even though they weren't perfect. Obviously, there's a thousand things you could say that were bad about it, but it was more of a human time, which they had more slack, basically.
That's true.
You kind of propagate. Yeah.
Yeah, McLuhan says the mechanical age dehumanized people, and then he says the electric age superhumanizes people. And then he says that some people will see the superhuman as supernatural. And then you get the retrieval of occult matters. So McLuhan is saying we're going in a new situation, and it's not all bad, and there's a new balance. There's going to be greater taxation, not monetary, but responsibility on you, the individual, to figure out the yoga of your self-entertainment. He says the new yoga will be self-entertainment. So you're going to have to juggle that. That'll be new pressure. But that's where he was completely different from anybody else, though you start to think that Leo Strauss was on the same point, right?
Oh, I know he was. I know he was, and there are a lot of authors that are. So David Graeber, for one, he's a anthropologist, but he's written a lot about economics, and he writes about this oscillation between credit-based economies and bullion, as in silver and gold-based economies. And it fits perfectly with McLuhan's visual versus audio tactile.
Yeah.
Because in the Bronze Age, they were credit-based, often credit-based economies. But with the Iron Age, and then with the rise of the Greeks and all over the world, you get coin money based on gold, and it's incredibly violent, lots of slavery, and that kind of has a little bit of a visual bias. Then we fall back down into the Middle Ages, which slavery disappears almost worldwide. Again, much less warfare and much more unity. And then we get the Modern Age, where we get the gold-based economy again. And then guess what happens in the 1970s? We get taken off the gold standard, and now we're venturing, and look with electric technology and the decentralized currencies, which are still in their infancy, we're moving towards a credit economy again. And that's good news. That means slavery and war are gonna become much less prominent.
Okay.
Leo Strauss was calling for the return of natural rights and natural law, which can only be founded in a religion. So he definitely fits into this. He was actively trying to bring it about, I think.
Yeah,
Strauss 101 is that we need a return of a stronger natural right belief in society, or natural right system, you know?
They didn't see I don't know if we can call it a disservice, but they didn't see deeply the effect of electric age that McLuhan saw, because McLuhan said you couldn't have ethics or natural law under electric conditions unless you made and acknowledged the new media environments as nature and then modulated the laws of media, which is what he proposed, not old-fashioned natural law.
Well, maybe not natural law, but natural right. Maybe it's not a legal thing, but natural, I would say that's probably more correct. I think that the natural right will lie more in a spiritual, with a spiritual foundation rather than a secular legal foundation, which it has been for the past few hundred years. So that makes sense. So that's perfectly in line with what I'm saying. So natural right rather than natural law. And natural right is even stronger when it's not really natural law. It's more of a ecclesiastical or whatever.
Okay, here's an interesting point. Thompson, building on McLuhan, said John Locke, made a big deal for the Enlightenment period out of property. And LaRouche would disagree with that, but putting LaRouche aside, generally people and Thompson talk about the importance of individual property rights that comes in the industrial age. Thompson then says today property doesn't work as a thing because people own things or engage with experience that they don't necessarily own because they get it through the free electric media, what McLuhan calls the software communism. So Thompson said the citizen should have a right to consciousness. That should be the new right, consciousness. And I don't know what he means by consciousness, but what you're saying, natural right, natural something, is what Thompson is saying. That we're not going to make property as a big do-all, be-all of personal identity. Consciousness becomes personal identity. So you'd have to ask him more about it. He doesn't develop that much.
Well, that makes sense because that's kind of more powerful than the property right. So
yeah,
it kind
yeah.
of accomplishes the same thing but on a higher level. So
okay, so your second point. You say, Bob, you mentioned something about McLuhan trying to turn the Vatican Church into an anti-environment. Now you say mind-blowing. That idea to you is mind-blowing, turning the church into an anti-environment?
Yeah.
Okay, then you say, this is obviously related to your work with ION. You said, I wonder what an actual Church of ION would look like, look in quotes. You've obviously already started. Okay, this is a key point that ION told me about 6 or 7 months in 2009, the first 6, 7 months. He said, Bob, I don't know, maybe I wasn't paying attention enough or something. He said, Bob, listen to this. First there was Templardom, then there was Christendom, now there's going to be Iondom. So to me, that sounds like a church. So I said, well, I'm not interested in creating a church. And Ion said, this will be far from a church, Bob. Now, we haven't talked about that too much, those words and what Ion meant, but definitely the power of our products, our cold fusion free energy battery, these are world-changing things, and they fit into a new inspiration called Iondom, but it wouldn't be a church in the old-fashioned sense. So, and definitely I say ION is an anti-environment to the huge disservices of the Android meme world we're in now, which not limited to medieval retrievals, but it retrieves, as McLuhan said, all times. That's why in my chart I've got Atlantis, Lemuria, China, and Egypt. You know, I try to include a lot of historical landscapes in what is the content of the Android meme, and yet IONDIM is something totally new. So what ideas, now that I've explained that to you, filled it out, what ideas do you get about us from that?
What?
What ideas do you get about us, IONDIM, from what I've just clarified?
Is that a question?
Yeah.
Your Canadian accent's really messing with me here.
Okay. You say, I wonder what an actual Church of ION would look like. I've just spelled out that it wouldn't be a normal church. ION's not going to do Christendom. It's going to be maybe so involved with technology, but having our products to balance off the negative parts of the technology that you do well with them. That's what I see ION creating.
Okay. So it's going to make you lots of money.
Well, no, you know what Ion says? I mean, I've heard it. All the gold is being shipped to me. He's been saying that for years, all the gold in the world. And Ion says that would happen and is happening because Bob doesn't give a fuck about gold. And gold's going to be obsolete. So you give it to a guy who you can trust ain't going to do anything with it because it's old. Now, why would all the gold be going? To me, because people realize that what we're doing is way more powerful, and those with the billions of dollars will want to get in on the ground floor, and they think they could buy their way in. That's how I interpret Ion's sentence about why the gold is coming to Dobstown.
Yeah, I think it's all fascinating, and I think I'd agree. It's not the church, full church thing. It's decentralized. McLuhan said. Talked about the de-Romanization of the church.
Well, yeah, it's de-individualizing, re-individualizing, which is what the Evergreens predicted. The Evergreens, well, McLuhan said through the Evergreens something he meant, but never in those words. Can you mute, Carol?
Or is there, no.
You can't mute? Why?
I can't. I have to use speaker.
Why?
Because I can't.
Oh, okay. So, So what McLuhan said through the Evergreens is that in the Industrial Age, the Gutenberg Galaxy, the machines dominated humans. Humans were in a prison of mechanical environments. What McLuhan had said in his books, the dehumanization of the individual. But that's when the machine environment was bigger than the individual. McLuhan said through the Evergreens that the individual was fragmented inside the mechanical environment. Now the flip was going to happen. With the superhumanization, and McLuhan did not use that word through the Evergreens, but he wrote it in his book, the superhumanization of the individual under electric conditions, what he said through the Evergreens, he said, the machine becomes fragmented, not the human. The human is integrated because it can hop from one tiny machine to another. So the human becomes dominant over the alienating machine.
Yeah.
That's what how I would describe the de-Romanization or the decentralization of media.
Yeah, I see how that fits. That's why. I mean, I'm trying to get a PhD in math or electrical engineering because I want to work on innovations with these actual physical machines.
Right.
To move them more in that direction because there definitely is a lot more that could be done. So that's kind of what I'm doing. That's kind of what I'm doing with my life, I think. So, and I study
that
stuff
good.
Too because I want to have the more humanistic insights also.
So it's a great vision. The fragmentation of the human in the mechanical age and in the electronic plus whatever we're moving into the digital age, it's the fragmentation of the machine. And the machine becomes our servant. And humans can hop all over the place. That's partly where I get quadriphenia from, that we hop from one environment to another or one body to another. So that process is what Ion sees coming. And it's starting already to be here. So,
That's interesting.
So definitely Ion is tuned in to what McClune was seeing, and Ion probably sees it better. And Ion is not old-fashioned. There's no old-fashioned religion, no return to medieval things or nostalgic human situation. It's all what Ion says is post-human, or the human that you think you are ain't going to survive what's coming. You're going to be something.
Okay, I get
different.
All that, but let me be clear that I was not suggesting again a return to the medieval or retrieval.
Right.
But it will be a retrieval of some of the characteristics, precisely because it is a shares similarities at its base.
Right.
That is why it's worth. I think it's medieval studies are of preeminent importance today. So we can understand what's going to happen next, even though it will be its own thing. And I think understanding the structure of the medieval Catholic Church and the Islam and the Church of Islam, whatever it's called, I don't know, but that's going to be important for how we organize ourselves. I think.
Can you summarize what it is about McClune that you've realized the past year that really made you be impressed with him? What was his main point, if there was one, that you got from him that you weren't getting a few years ago that you now really appreciate?
Yeah, that's tough because a few years ago I did read his dissertation, but even though that was, and that's the only thing, by the way, I've ever read of him from cover to cover. So, I definitely want to get more into his more famous stuff, but since then I have gone back and forth. As you know, with my feeling for him or my estimation of him. And in the past year, it has gone up, and that's really interesting. I think it's actually, if I'm charting my intellectual journey, what's happened in the last year, the big event was me discovering the work of Leo Strauss. So I think that might be it.
So another guy seemed to be saying and have the same interest as McClune. You were impressed with Leo Strauss, so that made, well, McClune must be on the right track because Leo, he's going where Leo is.
No, I'm not necessarily. I think it's more complex than that. But
you found another person that you respected or grew to respect Strauss and saw him similar to McClune, so that made McClune made the final heat, the final race.
Perhaps. Yeah. There's probably more to it,
Okay, so we got a couple people just came in. Let's see if they are addressing what we're talking about. Susanna, there's Christian, and someone else.
Hello.
Hello, who's this?
Hey, it's Christian. How you doing?
Yeah, are you going to talk about something we said?
Well, I can comment. It made me think of something else that I had read earlier or seen earlier about there's an economist named DeSoto, and they make a point about how third world countries are poor because they lack contract law. And the internet economy is rendering Western countries like the United States into third world countries, you know, in the same way, because we don't have good contract law.
Okay, we'll continue when the music's over. Just wait out the music here.
10-4.